I heartily welcome you to the Nerdist Podcast number 132.
First of all, I would like to extend a giant extra creepy hug to you guys because our New York Nerdist Podcast lives are sold out this weekend at the Gramercy Theater. So thank you very much for making that happen.
That was you. You did that. You did that. I love you so much. What's your problem, Portland, Northampton, and D.C.? Can't you see what New York did? Get on the fucking ball!
See, I turned on a dime like that. It's like a hug punch is what I've done. But anyway, so come see us in Portland, D.C. or Northampton, and thank you if you're coming to the New York show. Also, I'd like to announce that the phenomenal, thrilling Adventure Hour has come to the Nerdist Industries Podcast Network. The comedy team Acker and Blacker have created this show that's been around for a few years, and it is amazing, and it was an existing podcast, and they've moved it over to Nerdist, so make sure and check it out now. The latest episode features myself, Dana Gould, Patton Oswalt, Patrick Brewster, Paul Tompkins, and Scott Aukerman. That is also available if you go over to Nerdist.com, in addition to all the ticket information for other stuff. Hooray! Synergy! That's a word marketing people use! Also monetize. Something we'll figure out someday. Like now, we'd like to thank our returning sponsor, GoToMeeting, to the Nerdist Podcast. GoToMeeting by Citrix can host your meeting online from your computer while your attendees can join from any computer or iPad, and now for iPhone and Android as well. Visit the App Store or the Android Market, download the free app, start joining GoToMeeting sessions from absolutely anywhere. Anyone can attend your meeting online. They can all see the host's desktop right from their smartphone or their tablet. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting. Have all the meetings you want for one low flat rate. Phone and voice over IP conferencing is included for free. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code Nerdist. And now, the Nerdist Podcast number 132. Oh, this is a very special show, actually. Very special show. It's our first, like, in-studio music show, which we were thrilled and honored to have Ben Folds on the show. This episode's a little bit longer than normal, but I think absolutely worth it. I'm biased, though. And hopefully you will be, too. Nerdist Podcast number 132 with Mr. Ben Folds.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
One, two, three, go.
Talking on the podcast, talk. Should that be the new theme song?
Yep.
I think so. I can pull out a...
We never really separated season two from season one.
We have seasons.
We just started doing a host. Remember when we decided we would have seasons?
Yep.
And we made a different colored logo that
really
you
last.
And I only saw?
Nah, it didn't really last.
That's...
Yeah. Are you playing Bebot there?
Yeah.
What's the most important thing right now is that Ben Folds is sitting here.
Oh, that's
and we're
right.
Playing with your, we're playing with your robot.
Oh, that.
I'm going to back off the microphone because I'm pee-popping a little bit. We're recording at Swing House Studios because, and there's a very professional setup here that we're not used to.
Not at all.
The most professional.
Oh, Ben, the pee is a...
We're going to need you to take that again.
Or he's just mopping up a bit of blood.
It's
a hair trickling down the earlobe.
This is much nicer than the Seacrest compound we usually record.
A little bit, yeah. We're at Swing House Studios in Hollywood. And Ben, we don't really... We had sort of become friends via email a little bit.
Mm.
Like we became...
Is that what it seemed like? Friends?
Well, I don't know what
friends.
To call it.
I'm agreeing.
We became acquaintanced via the electronic mail.
I think that's a good honest disclosure.
And you said, you know, when I'm in town sometime, we can do this podcast thing, get together. And here you are. And so I decided to come record at Swing House Studios because they have a peony.
Yeah, and an old timey piano.
I
don't know how.
It's a real one.
Do you want a sarsaparilla?
City sarsaparilla?
Yep, city sarsaparilla. So, what are you doing in Los Angeles right now? What's going on here?
Yeah, we're working on a television show called Sing Off,
mm-hmm.
and it's people sing,
mm-hmm.
and It's good, and I talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Stockman of Boys to Men talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Bareilles talks about it, and then the show's over, and we do another one. It's actually really good because it's all a cappella groups.
Oh wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it is really cool because I mean these so many people can sing so well, and there's no music or there's no instruments. You know, there's no tapes, nothing for them to hide behind. They just got to go up, and if it's not good, it's pretty obvious. You know, but it's even when it's not good, it's very musical.
Now, is there a dick judge? Like, because every competition show seems.
I bet
to
it's
have,
the boy to man.
No, he seems. But they seem sweet. Like those guys always seem sweet.
Yeah.
No.
I just hope it would be. And it's the guy with the cane that goes, "Girl, you're not very good. I got one thing to say to you."
Yeah, we've dispensed with the dick judge model.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just trying to help them, basically. Like the reason I took the gig is because
this is TV. You're not trying to help people. What is happening?
I know it's a little weird, but I don't know anything about TV, and I haven't watched much TV since I was a kid. So I'm just sitting there listening to them, and if something's not quite right, I try to sort of get their trust in that, you know, I don't want them to think that I'm out to get them or anything. Like, these things went right, but then these things are seriously wrong, and you could work on them. Here's how. You know, your thirds were a little flat. You rushed in the bridge. The tritone substitution wasn't necessarily, and you should have thought of it a little more like in terms of polychord fractions. And then they're like, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Now, see, that is a kind of music nerd chatter that I can get behind rather than just, you're not doing it for me, dog. Like that, I don't understand.
But I have a dream, sir.
Well, maybe you should work on your fucking tritones.
What do I need that for when I have dreams?
You should have studied math a little bit harder.
Y'all don't know nothing. And then I leave.
And then you become more famous.
Did, and then that was it. We'd
that was it, yeah.
Jonah again.
Tonight on Dream Crusher.
I want to do a thing. Yeah. No.
Nope. There was an a cappella album full of your songs out there.
Yeah, that's how I got into it. Because I realized I always wanted to be a songwriter who was covered. Like, I didn't intend to sing my songs. I wrote songs and wanted everyone else to sing them, and no one did except for Bette Midler. And so I hadn't got any covers. And then out of the blue, I find out that there are like 300, 400, 500 YouTube versions of a cappella, my songs in a cappella from different universities. I was like, wow, these are my people. So I went out in a van with my engineer, and we recorded these groups in their in their natural habitat, kind of like a field recording might be in Africa. We'd come up with a few mics, and they'd sing in the lunchroom.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's actually Jeff Mangum from Neutral Milk Hotel went around Africa, like recording different tribes like that.
Oh, acapella cool. Animal groups?
They're acapella.
The antelopes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but like he went around to different tribes.
Oh, different tribes.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's interesting. I like the idea of making the field recordings of something that I know.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't really. It's like being a photographer. You go to Africa and you're capturing something that's new to you. So that's an interesting angle. But capturing something that you really know and understand, I think, is actually in some ways harder. But it's a bigger duty somehow. So I just felt like I should just go around. This is like African field recordings, except it's on campuses. And I'm not going to get bitten for the most.
Did you give them notes? Ever? Like, did you do any direction, or did you let them do their version without any?
They did their version exactly as they'd scored it, but I'd give them three or four takes sometimes and would make suggestions between them. Like, you're right. The same thing that I do on the show. That's why I took the shows, because when they asked me, I thought, well, this is exactly what I was doing on that record. Doesn't have to be any different. And I didn't know anything about all that. You didn't bring it stuff. So I know now, but I didn't know that then. So.
Yeah.
Now, I think Jonah has this classic story of seeing you perform. Was that at All Star Lanes?
That was at All Star Lanes in Eagle Rock. I had just moved to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the.
Al was there.
Al,
Yes. That was. I had just moved out here, and I was working at a record store in Venice Beach. And if you pre-bought the album, you would get a ticket. You know the whole story. So you would get to go bowling and get to see you play. And they also gave the record store just a couple passes.
Yeah.
So I went to it, and I was underage, and I still just got wasted, bowled, and then got to see. I was like right on the right hand side.
Glad
of the stage.
I facilitated some.
That was the best.
Activity.
It was the best. Like, and
Ben
then,
Fold says, "Drinking makes you colder, kids."
And then you started playing a song for the Dumped, and you said, "Oh, we got a new singer for this one."
Yeah.
And then I just, you know, you just see a long haired guy. I was like, "Oh, it's probably just some old rock and roll dude he knows."
Yeah.
And then you know, whips his hair back, Al. And it's Al, and I just like pissed and shit and puked. I just like, I couldn't handle it. I was 19 and I just moved out here, and it was like, I was like, LA is amazing. Shit like this happened all the time.
I'll tell you what's really great. It was at another bowling alley. Al and I went bowling, and I never bowled before, and he at least tells me he'd never bowled before, but he got good fast. He's physically so talented. And then he walked over to that. It had just come out, this kind of, I guess they've been big in Japan, those dancing machines.
Oh, the Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah. And he decided, wow, I'm going to put a quarter in that and do it. And he didn't realize the whole bowling alley was, absolute insanity what he was doing.
That's great.
He was keeping up with it pretty well.
He's got moves.
When I was 16, I had my first beer before Ben Folds 5 opened up for the Dave Matthews Band at Foxborough Stadium in 98.
Yeah, kids, call in if you had your first underage beer at my show. You know, tell your underage drinking stories.
Now, are you friends with Dave Matthews? Because Matt's been to so many Dave Matthews shows.
I have. I've been to a lot.
I met Mr. Dave years before he was famous, because a friend of ours recorded me and recorded David. And, you know, I would hear all his music, and I thought he was great. And I used to play it for people and say, this is going to be a big one. But what I realized early on is you either had the Dave Matthews gene or you didn't, because some people were like, what's that shit?
Right.
They just didn't like it at all. And other people were mesmerized by it. I thought it was really amazing. Like, I always really liked it. I sang We Are the World. Not that I don't drink that much, and I don't encourage my audience, especially under 18, to drink.
Well, but clearly they're going to anyway.
Yeah, they're going to anyway. They're gonna,
but if you're above 18, feel free.
Yeah, take it away. I don't know. It depends on what state. But I was waiting for, we used to move our own piano. Like, I would carry it in and put it up on stage with a ramp and then put it back. And I had opened up for this band, and Dave was there, and they invited us both up to come sing We Are the World. And by the time I'd sat through the two acts we were opening for, I was three sheets to the proverbial wind. And all I remember is Dave going, come on, Ben, let's go up on the stage. Like, all right, cool. And I remember he decided to take the Bob Dylan version. He's like, oh, the world. And then I thought, well, he's already taken Dylan. I guess I'll have to do Springsteen. And I couldn't sing for like 2 days because I was screaming at the top of my lungs, we are the world.
That's amazing. That was,
yes, that's my Dave. That's my brush with Dave. And I recorded something for, I helped record something for, I guess the inauguration or the opening of Dave Matthews Band Day in Charlottesville.
Oh, wow.
Which was, he had just gotten a record deal, and they were so chuffed about that. In Charlottesville, the mayor comes out, 10,000 people. I mean, where I come from, if you sell a couple records, they just boo you out of town. So I thought that was amazing. Wow. Yeah, and I put the mics in the wrong way. Sorry to go on with this, but I put the mics in the wrong way. We hung the mics in such a way that you couldn't hear 10,000 people when they clapped. You just heard... like people, you know, talking about whatever. It sounded so small. I walk out of the van and go, this is huge. It's a big event. Go back into the van, and it was just so small.
So
I want to apologize publicly to him. That's my fault.
That was 1998. It was Ben Folds 5 at Beck, and then Dave Matthews Band at Foxborough Stadium.
Yeah.
That was good. Because I got your album. My mom gave it to me for Easter. I got Whatever Never Amen for Easter.
That's a cool mom.
Right?
Yeah.
And there was a bottle of Jack Daniels behind it, and she's like, you know what to do.
It was a Rolling Rock.
You have to drink. Drink up, Sonny.
Just like your father and I.
Thanks, Mom.
Drink up. Get sad.
You were conceived before a Ben Folds concert. We were both 14 at the time.
My dad and I are talking now because he decided not to listen to the podcast.
Oh, good.
He's like, that'll help. I won't.
Matt has a problem of shitting on his family and then being confused as to why they're angry at him when they listen to the podcast.
Yeah. It's the
you know other people hear this show, right?
No, there's only 5-6 of us here.
No, you're formerly your family. So you're from North Carolina.
That's correct.
And so when did you realize, like, hey, I think music is a thing I could do with my life forever?
I was 2.
Nice.
Yeah, I was listening to records all the time, sitting on the floor and listening to records. And when the record player broke, I was taken to a child psychologist
because I was running around the record player singing the songs and crying because it didn't work anymore. So I guess I was trying to get that sort of centripetal happiness out of the record
player. Just like
player.
Superman Reverse Time.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, it, a record
it didn't work. Yeah.
And that's when Ben's father came and said, "You are not to interfere with human history." What was the record?
The Prime Directive. Well, it was a lot of records. I used to like Little Richard. I broke all the Elvis records.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to Little Richard records, and I liked I'm a Little Teapot, and what else did I like? It's hard to remember now. It was good stuff.
And as I had the album. Did you ever do like fake radio station where you'd be like, hey, it's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You make tapes where you're making, you're the radio station.
Absolutely, yeah.
I did that too, but you had cooler music than I had. Mm. My parents had like... Like the Bee Gees with the one, but the one that he
That's
did with
good.
No, but the one that he did with Barbara Streisand.
It's like, oh yeah,
oh yeah, that one. Yeah, I grew up with a lot of crappy like adult contemporary.
Yeah,
rock.
It's weird. A lot of people tell me that like they grew up with really white people music, but I didn't know white people made music when I was a kid. I just never heard it. Like all the records that were at the house were all. Like
good.
Soul records. Yeah. They're all old R&B soul records.
That's why you broke all those Elvis records, because you couldn't fathom. It's like, what is this white man doing with music?
I think so. I think it didn't make sense to me. Yeah. He didn't sound like it sounded too smooth. It didn't sound right to me. But then I discovered Neil Sedaka when I was 9 years old. And I would say my inner white man came out, but I'm not so sure that inner is the right word here.
My mom was obsessed with him.
With Neil?
When we went to Vegas a lot when I was a kid, and we saw him and Tony Orlando and just like all these, and like Helen Reddy, just all like the whitest
yeah.
Caucasian cracker acts you could possibly imagine.
they'll run a festival called that, like Cracker.
Yeah. Sponsored by Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah, but Neil Sedaka is, I mean, you know, what I really loved about this is just his harmony, his sense of chords and how kind of perfect it all sounded and cool diminished and augmented chords and all these little sus things. It was just really made me happy because the music that I grew up to that point was more about, you know, the soul of it and the vocals. And yeah, they had cool harmony, but there was something like so crisp about the Neil Sedaka stuff. I loved it. And I found out that he had a record contract when he was 13 years old.
Oh, wow.
So I wanted to have a record out by the time I was 13, so it didn't work out. I got my first record out when I was mentally 13, but it didn't.
There was like those old Harry Connick records where he named them after his ages, and there's like 11, 13, yeah. 19.
That's what Adele's doing right now.
Oh, yeah?
Every time Adele puts out a record, it's her age.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's adorable. Wow. I feel like I should know more about who that is, but I don't really.
Great singer.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, she is, yeah.
Yeah, really good singer.
Why am I already out of touch with popular music? I'm not old. Like, why did that happen already?
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort to keep in touch with what's coming out. And it can, because it's like so much more stuff starts seeming more foreign to you, or, you know, you don't like it, or you know exactly what they're ripping off. But that just makes
Which
it that
a
much
mistake. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
exactly.
A mistake to think about. I think it's just it's overwhelming because there's no real filter out there. Like, you don't, everyone thinks that they're not keeping up because there's so much out there. There's no way you could possibly keep up. So everyone feels the same way.
I was just listening over the weekend. This past weekend, I performed in Syracuse, and I was drive to perform at this college. And it was the 20th anniversary of Nevermind coming out. And so they did John Stewart hosted a town hall on Sirius with Dave Grohl and Chris Novoselic and Butch Vig.
Really?
Yeah, it was fucking amazing. But one of the things they were talking about is just like, yeah, there's no real... Like, rock music now isn't really a thing anymore. I mean, it really isn't. It's like all the music industry is behind, like hip-hop or, you know, or dance or country or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
Probably. I mean, I think that it's there in spirit, but it just doesn't have the same. You can't associate the same sounds or symbols or lyrics or anything with it. But I mean, sometimes comedy takes over, and that's the rock and roll of an era. Sometimes it could be movies, or, you know what I mean. Like, it doesn't have to be a rock band with like four guys that are hairy and sling guitars.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like if that specific style, if you like that and grew up on it. You might mourn the passing of it, but I think you'd hear, I mean, I don't know, like Skrillex or something. I mean, I don't like that kind of music necessarily, but that's pretty rock and roll.
But, you know, what's interesting to me about your music is that I feel like it doesn't sound like it's of any era. Like, you could listen to one of your songs and be like, oh, that was written in 95 or 2004 or, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what's, you know, do you even... just because I don't know how writing music in that way really works. I mean, how do you, when you're writing songs, how do you sort of approach that? Do you even think about that stuff, or you just kind of do what you do?
Well, I made one record where I tried really hard to make it dated, stamp it the year that it was recorded. And I recorded with a producer who was really at the top of his game at that moment. And that was the whole idea, because I felt kind of out of step. Like, I wanted to make something that... I mean, in all honesty, if you go back and listen to, like, old blues 78 and you go, that's amazing music, it's cool that it's dated. It doesn't have to sound, like, timeless all the time. And I don't know that my music does sound timeless, but I think that I've always been a little out of step is the thing. And so I haven't, like, taken on all the flavor of the moment. You know? I haven't done
just
that.
Saying that sentence lets us know that.
Yeah.
Flavor.
Ben Folds and Flavor.
Yeah, I haven't, you know, I've never made my music stupid dope.
Well, but when are you going to trip that shit? Is that a thing people say?
Trip, they
can.
I always
think so.
Trip that
they
shit?
Can.
If you say just a little more confidence, that was pretty good.
When are you going to trip that shit?
No, that sounds
hell
really,
what? No, dog. That was good.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
I think it was a little bit too white and intended.
Tonight on Dream Crushers, Chris Hardwick tries to talk like a cool person.
Now I see what you're doing there, what? And I don't like it.
I wish
you don't
someone
seem like a real person.
I wish
that
someone.
Would trip
their I wish
shit.
Someone would get in front of Simon for X Factor and be like, "Your show is very amateur." They just recreated, like, seeing the guy that looks like Randy Jackson. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Wait, that's not Randy Jackson?
I don't think so.
That makes me feel racist. Not. Then
why? No, but they clearly like glasses, bald guy.
Speaking of which, where's your plaid shirt and glasses?
What? Oh, I didn't. I'm not on the. Oh fuck.
Yeah.
Oh.
Shit.
One of these things is not like the other.
For those at home, there are three people with plaid shirts and glasses and one that doesn't have it.
Not me. I'm expressing myself with a polo shirt.
With a plain colored polo shirt.
Yeah.
That's why, really, I think you guys should adopt a uniform in here so no one feels left out. I mean,
that's right. Yeah. Well, that was the Catholic issues. School mentality when I grew up. You had to, like, they didn't want it. It was very socially. Yeah. Like, they
I
wanted
say
everyone.
We go Star Trek II uniforms.
You think so?
They're the most timeless.
Star Trek II?
Yeah.
You don't want to go Next Generation, then?
No.
Why?
They're so much nicer in Star Trek 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
All right. From now on, that'll be the uniform.
Cool. You show up next time, and we'll be sure to do it, too.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Want me to order yours?
See you at the party. Okay. We'll all wear it. All right.
Were you a Star Trek fan?
When I was a kid, I watched the first one, but I've never seen any of them after that.
Okay. So well, if you want to stick around afterwards, Matt will tell you about everyone in
I'll
detail.
I'll let you in.
Yeah.
It's great. It never gets old. Never gets old in there.
Jonah, it seems like you're being sarcastic right now.
No. Sincerity, all the way.
No? It sounds like you're being sarcastic.
It's my new thing. Well, being sincere about how much I like to hear Matt talk about
anything.
Star Trek. All the time.
No, but the facial motions that you're making right now are even more sarcastic.
No, he's being sincere, you
people
guys.
People can't hear
I'm
this.
Pretty sure.
I think
we wouldn't lie to
Dr.
Me.
Drew on this one.
Dr. Drew, go ahead.
Jonah, who touched you as a child?
Who didn't?
Oh.
That's horrible.
That's really what would be the problem. I like that you're also pretty, I mean, one of my favorite YouTube videos was the chat roulette thing that you did at the concert. Did that guy, was it set up at all, or did that guy really not know?
Was it none really? Of it was set up. We did it in 3 15-minute installments. We took out the dicks and just put it together.
Once we did that, we were left with 30 seconds.
Yeah. Basically, everything that was on the video was what was left after the dicks were removed and after any kind of technical glitch, like, you know, something that froze on the screen or something like that. And I just captured on my screen capture on my laptop on the piano. Wow. How
was
that?
Was it an all-ages show?
It was, and I did tell the audience that if there were, that we couldn't control what you're about to see, and that you might, if you don't like seeing lots of dicks, you probably should take your kids out.
Yeah. I went to the Ben Folds show. So many dicks.
Yeah, that's all right. The kids were drunk anyway.
They were so you beat me to it.
Oh, damn it. I'm sorry.
Give me some training wheels.
Do you have a comedy? Did you have a comedy background? Because I've always thought of you as like, oh, Ben Folds, he's really funny. Like, what's your sort of?
My inspiration, one of my main inspirations besides all of the soul records, was Andy Kaufman when I was a kid. And I saw all that stuff go down in real time, like every time, from the first time he was probably ever on television. And what was fascinating to me about it was the element of surprise, and there was also a dark thing in it. Mm-hmm. And my parents were, they believed it all. And I think a kid doesn't believe any of it because they it's like, wow, this is fun. You know, it's just fun. My mother was almost in tears one time because he was bombing on purpose, and it was so good. And I just thought, this is, as a kid, it's like he's breaking the law. So yeah, I don't have any kind of comedy background at all, but I just, that to me was kind of what music's all about. It's like, how can you make a chorus surprising, or how can you make things an element of surprise in a form that you've seen over and over and over and over again? And he would go on television, and one time after another, it's like, you know, he's going to be fucking with everybody. Did it again.
And people always work for it.
Every time.
Did your mom really hate Jerry Lawler? She's like, oh.
By the time the Jerry Lawler stuff came along, I guess I must have been in high school by then. And I knew it was going on, but I guess I kind of felt like I liked his old stuff. I got the old t-shirt.
I lived in Memphis for all that, which is where, like, Memphis was the epicenter of that wrestling movement.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where, like, Jerry Lawler and all that shit happened in Memphis. And just watching him... like
he took out airtime and would insult Memphis. Right?
Yes, yes, and
you saw that stuff.
Yes, and like shitting on it was so amazing.
Yeah.
Like just as a kid, just being like, "Holy shit!" I mean, like here are these rednecks that are going to watch local Memphis wrestling, and here's Andy Kaufman basically telling them that they're fucking stupid, and the reason they're stupid is because he's from Hollywood and he's smart.
And he's going to sue them.
And they're pig fuckers, and he's going to sue them. And it was so just like watching someone shake a jar full of bees, and it was an amazing, amazing experience.
No, it was good fun. So that's what I liked about comedy, were people like him, because it was just breaking the law.
Yeah.
You know, that's rock and roll. I mean, that's when there's rock music missing. I mean, I guess when he was, yeah, there was AC/DC and stuff. But I mean, I'm not sure that maybe that was an era that, you know, the edge was in comedy at that moment. He's Richard Pryor and Andy Kaufman and all those guys. And that's pretty rock and roll. I don't think they needed guitars. So
yeah.
I have a real respect for comedy. And a lot of my, you know, when I play L.A., you know, I don't have like an actor audience or I've just got a lot of people like Al Yankovic, you know, who are comedians. And they come out and they come backstage.
Well, because I think, you know, there's a certain, in all of your stuff, it's just like, oh, Ben, he's having fun. Like, he's funny, and he's sort of fucking with the format, and he's screwing around, and that's, you know.
But I find my comedian friends like, best of all, they like the sadder music they like.
Yeah.
It speaks to them more.
We do.
Yeah, they seem to understand why the humor is there and what it indicates, you know, because it's more of an indication of how hard someone is trying to either retain their composure amidst something that's not fun, or just making a joke at a funeral because they want to lighten people up.
Yeah.
But they get that, where a lot of people are like, oh, that guy writes novelty songs.
Really?
I don't know what a novelty song is. I hate novelty songs.
Well, a novelty song is... novelty songs are pretty... I mean, I guess...
Oh, yes, I call them the street. Look at that.
Yes,
that's a novelty
song. What about Guitar Zan?
That's Ray Stevens.
Yeah.
Hello, Mudda, Hello, Fada.
Yep.
That's not Ray Stevens.
No, that's not
a novelty
song.
No, I didn't say that was Ray Stevens.
We were just naming Ray Stevens songs.
Yeah. No, I was trying to think of novelty songs.
That's a serious song.
It's a real serious song about that horrible camp.
It's about abandonment. Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah.
No. Ray Stevens also wrote Ahab the Arab, which is very poignant for, you know... I mean, way ahead of its time.
I think that was Jeff Dunham.
It didn't really make sense until a post 9/11 world came to
play. Yeah, it was like Ray Stevens was really on to something. Why didn't we listen to the signs?
Yeah. It's a problem.
They start reading his songs like fucking Nostradamus quatrains.
Grandma's going to get hit by a reindeer.
I want to remake the movie Knowing.
The reindeer is capitalist America, and Grandma is the citizens.
Let's make a sequel to Knowing with Nicolas Cage, where it's Ray Stevens songs are the key to the world's end.
Yes, I'm sure they're hard at work on
Nicolas
the sequel
Cage
to
would
Knowing.
Do that.
He would do that.
Yes, he would.
Well, after Season of the Witch, I don't know what to
you
think.
You win some, you lose some.
He loses most.
Yeah, but he still fights, you know. Nicolas Cage.
It's always funny to hear about people like Nicolas Cage where you go, like, that guy's got like $100 million, and they go, he's lost all his money. Like, how do you spend that? What is that? How do you do that?
It's all of his copies of Superman #1.
I guess. I was like, did you ever see that special with the like the Michael Jackson special where he's walking through that gallery in Vegas and he's just pointing at stuff and he's like, I'll take that and I'll take that. And I'll take it. It was like he just spent $2 million in like 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's all relative. It's crazy. However much can come in can certainly go out. There's usually some tax story behind that stuff, right?
Yeah.
They forgot to pay their taxes.
They forgot.
Forgot. Yeah. Air quote.
I'm sorry. I made $10 million this month. I forgot.
You get five of that? I'm sorry.
No,
I don't understand.
That doesn't seem right.
Government.
So what, when you sit down, do you sit down to write? I always wonder that about musicians versus comedians. Do you sit down to write or do you have to get struck by the thing?
I have to get struck by the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually it. And I set up deadlines and basically line a lot of people up to be let down if I don't finish it. Because I always have songs in my head. And I always have things that I'm starting. But I find finishing it is really tough. And most of my best stuff was finished on a deadline because we had to get in the studio or I needed some extra stuff for a gig or something. Because you can enjoy the impulse of the song without it being finished. You kind of dither it out with da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Thank you, New York. I mean, you can fix it in your head, but when it comes to making it real, that becomes skill and it's work. And like you say, you have to sit down then.
Yeah.
You have to go, okay, I'm going to sit down and finish this song. The album I did with Nick Hornby, what I was blown away with Nick was that he makes writing hours every day. He writes great stuff. And that's against – if you come out of sort of – my era of rock music, the idea is supposed to be like, oh, it just came to me and it just kind of fell out. You know, no, you had to work at it. You know? and you're lying when you say that. And I've definitely implied that before, and it's not true. I work really hard at them.
Are you comfortable once something is done at being able to walk away from it and go, that's finished? Or do you ever kind of go, fuck, if I just had more time, I would have done this or this? Or are you good about just letting it go?
I think I'm good about letting the important part of it go, about letting the song part of it. I think I know when the song's finished.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have much, remorse and regret about what I did to the actual song. The presentation of the song is always what kind of confuses me. It's like, wow, do you record it like this or record it like that or turn it into a samba or what do you do with this? And I have a lot of ideas, but I'm never quite sure. Someone has to tell me to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good thing about the times I've had producers has been that they've told me to go home. And then you're finished. That's that.
Do you think it's important to have someone... In other words, if you're just left completely to your own devices, like, I'm going to record this at home and I'll do it all myself, does that idea excite you or is that like, no, I really need someone who can take all the stuff and then...
I think I need a sense of event. Like, I really enjoy doing this thing that we call the fake album, where the album Way to Normal was coming out in a month and we were in Europe. And we knew that it was getting ready to leak. So I thought, well, how cool. This is an opportunity to go in the studio and record all these titles with completely new music and completely new lyrics, and we'll make the whole album in one day. So wrote all the worst lyrics that we could think of. They were terrible. And my drummer's really good at bad lyrics. Like, he had this one song about, it's like a political song about changing the world, and my favorite line is, a piano's all I got, and I know that ain't a lot, but music has the power to change the future. I mean, he's a genius with that stuff. And I would just give him something to write. He'd just go with it. So the titles were the same. But what was really cool about it, well, the joke was on me at the end, because being forced to a one-day deadline, I wrote everything so fast. We recorded it really quickly. And I think that's a really good recording. I really like it. And then a lot of people heard the record and were disappointed when they heard the real record because they liked the fake record, mm-hmm. Which is kind of hurts your feelings. But... That's just it's just that not that's a sense, that's like an event where you get some event. So like I'm going in to record with Ben Folds 5 in December. That's an event. So we said we'd do it. I've told people we're going to do it. So now the pressure's on and I have to do it. And that's the way we always made records before. So it will be an event. And then I'll know when to turn it in because the studio time will be over and we'll have to turn it in. There'll be a release date and all those things will happen.
Have you written those songs yet?
No. I have bits and pieces that I've thought about that I think are really good. But I haven't got full songs.
When was the last time you played with them?
We played about 2 months ago to add to a retrospective album that we're releasing. And it just seemed like it'd be a good kind of bookendy thing. Like, you know, well, not bookend, but... you know, like it's
the album. Book middle.
You can put
middle.
You can put a little thing in the
gargoyle in the middle of two.
Yeah. Exactly. So we got together to record some stuff for that record. And I had all these ideas, and we just started running with the ideas, but they sounded more kind of like the future of what we would do. They didn't sound like something that would go on a retrospective record. So there was a conscious effort to kind of back up and kind of make three songs to add to the record that sort of said something about the past that were a little more reflective and not kind of forward-thinking. And then I've still got all these like kind of the future songs are still in my head, but I've been, you know, spending so much time talking and kissing ass lately, I haven't had time to write.
Well, is it... I know, because you sort of relocated out to L.A. temporarily.
Yeah, I know. I've got the hang of it, too. I'm getting good at this shit. Yeah.
You want to meet for drinks at that place? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah. Power drink.
Oh, you have to write? I don't give a shit.
Don't need to write.
Do you feel... so with Ben Folds, because this is always fascinates me about bands and groups, and so you've worked as solo, and you've worked with different producers and people in different bands. Do you feel like, okay, now I'm in Ben Folds 5 mode, which is actually slightly different than solo Ben Folds mode? Like, do you see them as modes, or do you just still feel like, well, I'm just sort of making this stuff, or do you feel it?
I think it's really fun to plug yourself into a variety of situations. You can make them uncomfortable sometimes and sometimes not. And just see how you react to it, but react honestly. Mm-hmm. So I don't think, okay, well, I'm saving my change my clothes kind of, and this has been Folds 5 mode. I just go in and react to that situation the way I would. And then, you know, and I play with an orchestra, then I react that way. And the same as with doing the sing-off. I would never, if I just spent I think musicians brand themselves too quickly and they go, okay, I am this person. And then they take their lyrics and what their fans might think of their lyrics and the way they dress and everything. They begin to really marry themselves to it. And I think if you go too long without kind of testing that and doing other things, you know, put yourself in a funk band, play with string quartets, do other things that keeps you more you, you know, because you can invent yourself and then stay stagnant inside that. And when I play with Robert and Darren, Ben Folds 5, I play the way I play with them, and it just starts to happen, and that's just what happens. And I don't attempt to play that way with anyone else, but there's a similarity, you know.
I remember about 7 years ago, I was watching something and I heard this really pretty song on the TV in the background, and I ran over to look, and it was you and Ben Queller and Ben Lee.
Mm. Yeah, that's fun.
The Bens. You guys did Did you do it? Did you do a full album, or was it the Just Pretend song?
It was an EP, and it was the same kind of thing. It was just plugging myself in a totally different, because I felt really free after leaving the band, because I could go do all this other crazy stuff.
Is it like breaking up with a girl a little bit?
Yeah, I played the feel, motherfucker.
I want to get inside the other bands. Yeah,
there was also those commercials.
That's right. I want to get up in. I want to get up in some Queller.
There was also those commercials you did, and Corinne from Slater Kinney was in the.
Yeah,
band.
That's yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I just loved the. I loved the process of it, because the way that you guys told the story was. Yeah, we were in a studio, and we all went off in the corner, and we each wrote this section of the song, and came back, and that was the song.
Yeah,
and that always. It was like, oh yeah, I guess you could do that. It just never occurred to me. Like, oh yeah, you can do that.
It's just and then it goes back to, it's just another way of working as yourself with other people, because Ben Folds 5 would have never worked that way. Mm-hmm. This was just very random. We were actually only kind of slated to be a bill in Australia, or it was just going to be the Ben's tour. So the three of us were just going to do solo sets separately. And then Ben Lee called and said, you know, we really need to do like some kind of commemorative EP together. And even that was going to be very separate, but we got in the studio and just started making shit up. And we were in there for like 2 days, made a whole EP. And when we sold it in Australia, we like charted like top five or something, just selling it out of the van.
Oh my God!
It shows it did really, really well.
Who's the Australian guy tracking that? Stand next to this van and see. That's one.
Well, let me rephrase that. It didn't show up on the charts. It's just that we knew that we had sold 20,000 records or something like
Holy
that.
Shit.
And the top hit in Australia hadn't sold that much. So we just took the liberty of saying that we're in the top five. So
number one.
We're number one. Yeah. We may as well just go all the way here. We were number one. You won't see that if you look back at SoundScan.
Technically, we own Australia.
Yeah,
we kind of own that. But we knocked Dire Straits off the off their fucking
still,
high horse.
Still on the,
about time.
Dire Straits.
Dire Straits. I think Brothers in Arms is like one of the highest grossing, like the high of all time in Australia.
Probably.
Maybe
yeah.
even still.
Even more than ABBA.
Maybe even more than ABBA or Pink Floyd.
Hmm. It's the indigenous aboriginals that account for most of the sales.
You didn't think that's what it is?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't think that at all.
Hey, come on. You know, maybe you need to listen to a little band called Midnight Oil. Maybe you wouldn't take such fucking...
Midnight Oil.
Yeah, Midnight Oil. How can we sleep while our beds are burning, Matt? We take our fucking land and give it back.
Give it back.
Give it back.
Here you go.
Yeah, thanks.
Dying.
Dying.
Yeah.
It's that kind of asshole where you mention Australia and I just casually get in, go into the accent. Oh, you look Australian, Ben.
I love bad Australian accents.
Oh,
they're great.
Oh,
the worst
yeah, me
better.
Too.
It's actually getting yeah. good. You're getting good
at that.
I
don't
know what that was. You're getting good at it.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at it, too. Hey, I'm from Australia.
Yeah.
Pretty spot
wow,
on.
Wow, Brisbane,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but it's an Australian guy doing a really good American accent.
Oh, that's a good. Yeah, you flipped it there.
Yeah.
I see what you did. So do you still talk to the Queller and the Lee of the Bens? I mean, are there any plans?
A couple emails here and there. We just all stay really busy. I think that was something we got done with that and we just kept moving. We were afraid to relive the magic.
Yeah.
You could have filmed the Behind the Music in real time. It was about an hour we were together.
So. Live. We're going to live stream the Behind the Music.
Yeah. The whole thing.
Then
the breakdown.
Trouble struck. Guys, I don't have any more change for the meter. Yeah. I got to go.
Yeah, that's right.
I want to hear about the William Shatner album.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a really great album. I'm so proud of that one, and it didn't sell all that well, but I thought it was a good record. We made that one in about 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, wrote and recorded everything, and he was impressive.
Yeah, that Pulp cover is incredible.
Yeah, I really wanted him to do that. I pushed that one on him.
Did he understand? Like what the band was?
No, he didn't know where it came from. There were a few covers I was trying to push on him, and I would have him read them. I mean, I spent the first couple days extensively interviewing him, and we literally, I'm going to stop using that fucking word. We hung a light bulb.
Figuratively, there was a light bulb.
Yeah, that's right. A real light bulb.
Yeah.
A bare bulb hanging in the middle of my old studio, and like a little card table, and I sat in front of him with an old mic, and I interviewed him.
What the fuck, Jonah?
I was scratching my head. I'm sorry. I didn't,
you okay?
Yeah.
Did you hit?
I hit the mic. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I didn't mean to.
I thought like picked off a mole or something.
No, I just
going to start bleeding profusely.
Yeah. No, I
sounds
just
like
to...
you fired a gun.
Yeah. Like one of those Monty Python movies, yeah. Blood shooting all over the studio.
It's fine. It's fine.
You're turning very pale. There's a pool of.
I'm just hungry.
Are you okay?
I'm cold.
Do you want cold, Chris? Some juice
I'm
and
so
a cookie?
Cold, Chris. I'm so cold,
mommy.
Sorry about that.
So Shatner, did you get the sense that Shatner understands the Shatner phenomenon?
Oh yeah. He's in control. He knows what's up. Yeah. He's just being himself. And he gets that. He gave me a lot of material just in the interviewing. And then I had him read some things. Like I had him read Cake, a song by Cake I like. What was that called? Comfort Eagle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Really cool song. And I thought, how cool would that be for Shatner to recite this? It could be really neat. And then I had him recite the transcription of the Hindenburg disaster. I've got that. And I should make a CD of it and sell it on eBay.
You haven't put that anywhere yet?
You know, the great one was Shatner interviewing. I would have him interview people on the mic while we were doing sound check, interviewing Henry Rollins.
What?
Wow.
And I don't know that he ever had done an interview series before, but it didn't surprise me when he then did
Raw Nerve.
Yeah, when he did that. That was Shatner's thing, right?
Yeah.
Because he's really good at it. Yeah. He's a great listener, and he really gets into people's heads. And I never saw or heard Raw Nerve, but what he was doing in the studio was great. I mean, you know, Rollins would kick my ass for saying that he cried or anything. He did not do that, but he had him on the couch like completely, like it was in psychotherapy.
Wow.
And it was really absolutely fascinating.
No one gets inside Rollins.
Shatner's is he like Hannibal Lecter in that way?
No,
he was Lamb, just... stop screaming, Ben.
Yeah, well, there's that. He does talk like that.
That's the way he talks. But
but for real, like when you're talking to him for real, he talks that way, or does he Shatner it up?
Benny, you're picking at me like a chicken.
Yeah.
Benny, Billy.
What were he and Rollins talking about? What was he digging around in Rollins
about? You
should
about? Release mom. That. You have to release that. Just the conversation between Rollins and Shatner.
Exactly.
Talking about his brilliant. Mom?
He was talking to Rollins about how he grew up, his relationship with his mother, his first girlfriend, all kinds of stuff. Wow. And we're just setting, we're like setting levels and stuff in there. And I said to my engineer, Joe, record all this shit. I don't care what you do. Record it all. He goes, well, I'd like to get some levels. Fuck the levels. Just keep recording. This is amazing. Of course, I have no idea where that tape sits in the studio somewhere, but we really should. I should send it to Bill and Henry because they've become friends now. Like, they watch football together.
So. That's so weird.
I brought them together.
Yeah.
That is an amazing marriage of awesomeness,
yeah.
The two, Rollins and Shatner.
Reality show. Reality show, just two buddies, the real odd couple.
Henry had so much respect for him, which was really, really cool. And they just got along really well. I really like both of them. I really like Henry a lot. He's a great guy.
I feel like the first thing that should happen is putting the Shatner monologue of the Hindenburg over the Hindenburg footage.
Yeah.
I mean, that right there is 10 million views on YouTube alone. And then that interview series sounds.
Or what would be another visual, like something modern that it could play against would be really kind of interesting too. Just
a kid eating ice cream.
Yeah. just a bunch of chubby American kids like jumping fried
food in good slow motion, like high speed. You know, just shoving it in.
Yeah,
that'd be great. Like the Red Sox collapse.
I don't know
whatever.
What that is.
I'm just saying, it's very
what happened.
Tragic.
They collapsed.
They had a 9.5 game lead, and they're tied right now, and there's two games.
Oh, that would work.
Yeah,
he really went over the top. I was expecting him to do it, but I was learning about how he, how he delivers and what his method is. Because when he read the Hindenburg thing, he was aware of, he'd heard it a million times. It's like. And the Hindenburg, whatever it is, all the humanity. You've heard that, right? And he just really overdid it. I mean, he was crying and wailing and yelling up into the sky and stuff. And I thought, okay, well, I can't let him do this on this record. Like, this is the opposite of what we need to do because that's what people expect of him. And he's funny and his timing's funny and everything. But what I realized is the most powerful thing would be if he just gave us the truth. Yeah. Just like... Tell us your story, things about your life, what you love, what you don't love, what just the things you write songs about. And when he would do it in a really animated way, he got sick of this. But I'd say, could you just do it straight this time? I just want a straight take. He goes, but you're going to use it if I do it that way. I say, yeah, I probably will. But let's give it that go. And he thanked me for it when it was over because I think he realized that I had his back. I didn't want him to come off like a clown. I wanted him to come off like him,
That's so funny. I mean, as you're saying that, for some reason, I'm starting to think about Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah.
And just that period of his career, with the Zucker Brothers, where it was like, was just straight.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, he realized, like, wait a minute.
I'm funny.
I'm fucking funny. And then there were a string of movies where he was totally, like, playing the comedy. And it was like, no! I mean, I love him. I loved him to death.
Yeah, he's all good, yeah.
But there's that point where you're like, oh, no. Go back to before when you were still, like, straight guy.
You don't have to do Spy Hard and Mr. Magoo. You don't have to.
No.
But he did, and I'm okay with Spy Hard.
Are you? Yeah. You're okay with it?
Yeah. I enjoy it. If not, I'll watch it. Yeah. Al did the soundtrack.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a really good opening credit sequence.
It is.
It's like Al swimming through.
We were sort of gushing about Al on the way over, but one of the best people ever, that guy.
Yeah.
Who just never ceases to amaze me that it's like he's still fucking awesomely relevant. And that makes me happy.
No, I think we should all bow right now in the direction of Doheny. Just take a second.
Is there any, most of the comedy people that I know and a lot of, like, there are so few people that I feel like were not touched by that guy in some, well.
Well, he touched.
Exactly.
Name someone, please.
I mean creatively, who wasn't touched by that guy in some way. You must have been a huge growing up.
That would be a great record of touched by Yankovic.
touched by an owl. Owl Joel. Hello, I'm Roma Downey. I'm here with Al Yankovic.
He was interviewed on Raw Nerve.
Al was?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
How was it?
it was, you know, it was a good interview.
Yep.
Yeah, real deep. That's what the whole show is about. And just the seating arrangement on that show is neat. It's like, you remember that old SNL commercial?
The toilets.
Yeah, the love toilet?
Yeah.
That's what the seat was like. It was just two chairs, like, matched in the middle, facing opposite ways.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, facing each other. And, like, his like, Shatner's hand was on the other person's hand a lot of the time to kind of comfort them. But, yeah, it was a great episode. It's downloadable on iTunes.
They're not making that show still.
No, but you want it to be longer. You want it to be longer and have more of the, but it's like kind of cut for commercial and stuff like that.
I'm just going back to something you said earlier. I guess it just hit my brain, but I'm fascinated by the idea that you said when you set out, you really kind of wanted people to just do your songs.
Yeah.
Like rather than, I mean, so at what point did you go, fuck, I'll just sing them? Or was that just, were you just sort of biding your time until that happened?
Well, I always have had very low self-esteem about singing. It's not something I'm comfortable with. Even now, I'm just not comfortable with it. I would show people, I would get like official singers, you know, like the guy who's in the neighborhood who's known for singing, and bring him around and show him the song, and then he could record it for me. And I couldn't get them to take out all the jive. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be like, you know, show them something like, I don't know, you know, I love Al, and they go, I love Al.
Soul yodeling, call that.
Soul yodeling, yeah. They do something to it which would make it sound, it would just make it not, I didn't buy it, that's all. And I just thought, you know, that a vocal should be, how cool would it, I had a theory, you know, that the vocal should not have vibrato and it shouldn't have any licks and it should just be like a real plaintive, just straight ahead, stoic delivery of the lyrics, and that people would really listen to the lyrics then instead of the notes. And after a while, I realized no one was going to do it. And I got more comfortable just showing them, you know, just hearing myself sing didn't make me want to vomit anymore, which I used to get so nervous, you know, even just to show the guys a song. I would say, here's the song. I'd start to show them a thing. I would just get clam up and get nervous. I just felt like it was something I couldn't do. But it took me a while. I was probably, I think I landed the plane on that issue right as Ben Folds 5 was breaking.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, and one of the reasons is I was looking through all of my material for this retrospective. The cutoff date for me was anything prior to being just comfortable enough to actually deliver the song. Because before that, it sounded like shit.
Really? You honestly?
Oh, absolutely. It's horrible.
God, but your voice is so, it's so great. Oh, you know that now,
no,
right?
I don't. No,
God,
but I think.
It's at least it's comforting to me to know
this
that,
is going to get like raw nerve. I'm going to start crying.
Yeah. lay on the couch. Lay on the couch. No, it's just it's comforting to me, and I'm sorry that it's because of a
at
painful thing for you. But it's comforting to me to know that even people that you look up to and you go like, oh no, they've made it. You know that they still like have the same insecurities and the same kind of stuff that you know you had when you started out.
Well, and it kind of ties into some of the other stuff we were talking about. You plug yourself into other situations and you cause deadlines and you try to move along quickly because no one is qualified, no artist is qualified to tell you what works about what they do.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that actually reaches people, like that touches people, like Al, is. is the thing that they can't see. It's the thing that's directly in the middle, so no matter how many times you turn around, it's right there in the center and you can't see it. And that's why when I produce people, I like to get them out of that zone. Because they always think, if you ask someone like, why did people, you know, people liked you in high school, why is that? And someone's going, well, and I was a class clown and I gave people candy, or they'd come up with some crap. And then, you know, you ask the people in the class, go, no, it's because he was a nice guy and it was because I like this and this. It would be different reasons. So artists begin to arm themselves with all these reasons that they are, that they work, and then they arm themselves with the reasons that they don't work and their insecurities. And I have no idea. I mean, I trust that when I make pitch mouth noises, that it's acceptable for a commercial recording, that it's a commercially viable recording. But I don't accept that it's something that I think is very good that I would want to hear. I do intellectually, but I don't otherwise.
It's we're in such a, like, the American Idol culture of what's happened to singing now.
Yeah.
Drives me fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Because when you listen to, if you listen to old recordings, like, you listen to someone like Etta James or old Stevie Wonder, they're not, I mean, Stevie did some crazy stuff with his voice, but
he's dancing with it, he could.
But yeah. It wasn't like, I feel like what's happening is people are confusing technical proficiency with soul. And it's like, no, just going at the end, that you're just fucking showboating. That doesn't mean that you actually have a story to tell or any right. soul or any kind of thing. It just means you can control your voice, and you and I feel like people should be sparing with that shit.
Yeah, I prefer that. And at the same time, and then what happens is we say that, and we kind of put that in sort of some policy that you file away in your head. Then someone comes along the next day that does all that jive ass shit that you were talking about, and we love it because for some reason they connect in that way, you know. So who knows? But I agree with you. I'd rather hear someone suck straight ahead, yeah. like than suck with all the technique. I think it was Angela Adams had some really great quote about a technically perfect photograph of no idea at all is much worse than a shitty photograph with a good idea or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but it's strange coming from him because everyone always said he was Mr. Technique.
Yeah.
But what he was saying was, if you don't have an idea, if you don't have anything to say, then like shut the fuck up, which I think is the way he worded it. Actually, come to think of it, that was the quote. He said, "If you ain't gonna bring it, dog, then shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up. Yeah. Take that shit downtown.
Downtown, yeah,
motherfucker.
Yeah,
Ansel Adams.
You're getting good at that. Yeah, that's what Ansel said. Yeah.
It's one of those inspirational demotivational posters. It's just like Birch and then him, that writing underneath.
It was a bunch of trees that just formed motherfucker, like a perfect. He managed to shoot this perfect black and white landscape.
Very talented.
Mostly black.
Mostly?
His book was...
Chris, what the fuck? Chris.
For those of you at home, Chris has impaled his eye on an SM57. Now we have two people really spurting blood.
Really the best mic to impale yourself on. I gotta hand it to
you. It makes it for the best noise, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I was... Yeah.
Boink.
I was laughing so hard that I leaned forward, and I'm not used to these like shotgun style mics, and it just
neither am I.
A lav would have gone right up your nose.
Yeah, you know? I could have been horribly killed. I would have had to pull that out of my brain.
A little French boy on an airplane with a fist about the size of this the capsule of this SM57 microphone punched me in the eye in an airplane one time, and it was so painful because his fist was just like just the size. His mother. It was one of those three-seater things, and he and his French mother and me, and it looked like we were a family. Mm-hmm. I was like 28 years old. I was horrified at the idea of anyone thinking that I might have a family. I was right. like, that's not very rock and roll.
No.
And she said, could you look after my – well, you can do the Australian accent, so you can do this,
yeah,
right?
Pardon me. Would you look after my – how do you say shitty child?
Exactly. So she said that, and then she went to the bathroom, and this kid's just started getting really naughty, and I was like, shh, 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 be quiet. And he's like, pee, 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 pee. And I did that back to him, joking, thinking he would think that's funny. He said, pee. And I said, pee, boink.
Whoa.
Little motherfucker popped me right in the eye, didn't have my glasses on, and it went like right into the socket.
She comes back, his hands just in your head.
By the time she comes back, then I'm beating the shit out of him. Yeah. It was horrible. I couldn't explain to her, your child hit me.
You don't even know. You're crying. You don't even know what he did to me.
Your child made me experience the most pain of my life.
Yeah. And then the mom goes, me too.
Did you? Yeah, I know. Yeah. Could you ever imagine a child causing so much pain? Eh oui.
Eh oui.
Eh oui.
Do you, when he came out of my oui.
When he came out of my oui. He is no longer.
He's a big, huge.
I like how we always revert to like some kind of Mexican accent.
Yeah, I'm like, where is that going?
Yeah, what the?
He's, I always go to Italian for some reason.
He was like a prosciutto. My vagina's like prosciutto.
I don't know why I always salty. Go to Italian. Salty, yeah. But slim.
Yeah.
Did you write a song about it? I feel like a little French boy punching you in the eye. There's a song in there somewhere.
There's a song in there somewhere.
There is.
And if it turns up on the next Ben Folds 5 album, that would be fine with me.
Points.
Punch me in the eye. Punch me in the eye. Punch. You got to be repetitive these days. It's like that has to go. If that's going to be a hit, it really you have to drive it home. He punched me in the eye. He punched me in the eye.
Where did he punch you?
In the eye.
What was in it again? The eye.
You got to repeat it a bunch so it could be mashed up with a hip hop song, and then it'll become a hit.
Then it goes.
Then one day.
In the eye.
Then those Kia hamsters are driving to it.
Oh. That sounds like it might be a song by Maroon 5. Eive. Have you ever worked with an artist where you're producing and they're kind of shitty? And
no.
You haven't?
Not yet. I haven't. But anyway.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm lucky because I don't have to do that for a living. I can only do one every once in a while, something I really love. But I'm sure I've worked with shitty people. Let me run that back. Keep
no, that was actually, that totally answered my question.
That's, yeah.
Because I'm fascinated by, I have this idea that nice people, that if you ask a bunch of nice people, like, have you ever worked with assholes? Most of them will be like, eh, you know, not really.
Mm.
And then I feel like there's some people that just sort of create the drama.
Yeah.
And that they're sort of magnets for it.
Yeah, asshole magnets.
Kind of. Because yeah. I've been doing television for a long time, and I don't feel like I've ever worked with someone where I'm like, what a fucking, they wouldn't come out of their thing, and they,
yeah.
I've never had that
I don't see
before.
Much of that either. It's weird. But people like that myth, you know. The guy that just the guy's a raging asshole all over the set, and then you have to get him out of the trailer and he's face down in a pile of coke, naked and all this stuff. I've never seen that before. Like, well, people are really not.
There was a mirror around.
Yeah. It's hard to see when you're just white all in your eyes. Yeah. Snowblind. That's my new album. I don't know why I brought that image up. It's not something I ever even thought of before. But. No, but I think people do like to like the idea that performers and people are assholes. But I guess there's also people who attract those people in their lives, so they attract those to work with, I guess. But I don't like to attract people that can't. Some producers like working with artists who aren't that great because they feel they're malleable and it allows them to put their stamp on it. Sure. So they can kind of save the day and come in to save the day. But I'm more interested in documenting what they do and being part of it.
Yeah. Do you find that just kind of the way that you approach, I just feel like you've carved out your own thing, and I think that's kind of what I've always been. So I'm always like, that Ben Folds, I really like that. I really like that guy. How important do you feel like radio airplay now, like the classic form of the business? Do you feel like any of that's important anymore, or do you just feel like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do?
Well, I have to have the attitude that I'm going to do what I'm going to do, but if, you know, lightning strikes in radio or on the internet or in like, you know, churches or wherever, then they should just take it away, and I'm very lucky to have it. I probably radio is not really where I'm going to ever live again, I don't think. But I wouldn't write it off. It's just it's not necessary for me because I know how it works yet. I went to Pandora, and the guy who started that showed me the behind the scenes way that the musicologists there rate all the songs, mm-hmm. so that they have to find some algorithm or whatever to make them work together. And it's fascinating. Those guys are on it.
Well, they'll tell you. Cool. If you go onto Pandora's website and you select a channel and then it brings up a song, it'll tell you if if you click on a link, we've selected this song because you like music that has harmonies and mid-range bass tones and this.
And there's pages and pages of that analysis behind it that it's fascinating, like down to like spectral analysis and the key center and the key movements and the tone of the words and the pronunciation and all this shit. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's weird though, because sometimes they'll be on the mark, and other times you'll be like, well, these bands maybe to a naked ear sound exactly alike, but they're completely different bands. Like, you know, even just, but that's when you bring in that it's like, well, this band politically would never be anywhere near this other band, even though they're both playing, you know.
I'm fascinated.
But then you can give it the
like
thumbs down and it won't like you.
I like the Genius Playlist algorithm on iTunes. Have you ever like had it create a Genius Playlist for you?
Yes.
Oh.
My phone has a knock thing, as a knocker sound on it. Sorry.
I was just talking about the Genius Playlist thing on iTunes, where you just select a song and then, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you just click the Genius Playlist button, and it, you know, it downloads everything up to the cloud, or rather puts it up to the cloud, and then it gives you an algorithm, and then it just puts a 25 song playlist in front of you.
I like what RDO does. You know, I know I bring it up all the time, but like, you know, they do a thing where it's, you know, artists, they separate it with artists. Inspire. You're listening to a band, and these are the artists that inspired this band. These are the contemporaries of this band, and these are the bands that were inspired by this band.
That's
and I
cool.
think that's a better way to go about it.
And whose is that? What's that?
That's RDO, RDIO.com. It's like Spotify, or it's like a pay site, like a, you know, what's that other one? It's just like
subscription,
you know, kind of subscription vibe. Stuff. Oh. And
big controversy with Spotify.
What is it?
They formed a partnership with Facebook. And so now if you want to sign up for Spotify, you have to sign up with your Facebook account, and it will tell people what you're listening to. And it's just like, hey, maybe give people the choice.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't want everyone to know what the fuck I'm listening
to.
Just,
they need to connect everything. Everything needs to be connected. But I do like RDO a lot. And it's a great way to just, you know, sometimes you forget. You forget about bands. And, like, if you're listening to, you know, Supertone, you're like, oh, I forgot all about, you know, this other band. Yeah. Like Portastatic. Oh, yeah, I love Portastatic. I haven't been listening to them forever.
Do you go out of your way to listen to new stuff? Do you force yourself to listen to new stuff just to try to stay, like...
I never have. But I find that it finds you, you know? Like, if something's really interesting to you, it'll tweak your ear somewhere, and unless you're living in a cave, which I have before, but, you'll hear it. But I don't really... Every once in a while, I'll go on one of those trips where I just go around the internet and do that if you like this, you'll like this kind of thing for a night, and that usually sets me for about a year.
Yeah.
You know? And then you just pay attention to what's going on. But I'm not that interested in staying like right up to the minute. I never have been.
Who are you listening to currently? Like
Nat King Cole.
Yeah.
A lot of Rubinstein playing Chopin. Shostakovich.
Can you play Chopin?
No. I just like to listen to it. Yeah. I can't play it. I mean, I guess I could play it if that's what I set my mind to. But I stopped kind of playing like by reading music and all the ways that you would do it. I just ceased doing that when I was about 9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So because I just had songs in my head I wanted to get out. And that wasn't leading there. You know, listening to it does lead to ideas. You know, it spurs you on. But actually playing it and getting inside of it and you understand how it works, and that's good. But I'm not sure that was the way for me to be creative, so I didn't do it. But I never learned other people's music either. Like, people say, oh, you must know, like, Billy Joel songs. No, I don't. I mean, I heard them, and I like them, but I never sat down and learned to play them.
Except for Tiny Dancer.
Tiny Dancer I learned because Elton was going to sit in at one of my gigs, which I had to cancel, which was I so regret that.
Oh, no. What happened?
Well, I sat in with him in Adelaide at the Enormo Dome there, and we played the Bitches Back, and it was fun. You know, I played on my little electric keyboard that they'd given me, and I'd look up, and he was like, you know, playing his big one with his ass, and you just hear the crowd roar, and I was like, what's happening? And I'd look up, and he's making those great. He was so cool. He was just like such a ham. And then so it's like, okay, well, he was going to come sit in with me in Sydney. And I was like, holy shit, I got to learn one of his songs. I've never done that. So I learned Tiny Dancer. Unfortunately, we booked two shows there, and the promoter canceled one of them because we didn't sell tickets.
Ben, I'm sorry to cancel your show. You didn't sell tickets.
Yeah, tickets.
And you're like, oh, that's so adorable. I don't mind that you're giving me horrible news.
Yeah, bloody disgrace.
Yeah. What happened? So they just can't, they totally...
Yeah, I mean, we kind of decided with them. It was one of the only gigs I've ever canceled. And we canceled because the first night sold really fast, and then they tried to sell the second night. For whatever reason, it just didn't happen at the Enmore Theater. So we shit-canned it, and Elton couldn't do that night. So we just didn't do it. So I'd learned Tiny Dancer, and I was walking around with this cover that I knew. So I thought, well, I'll start doing it live.
Do you find what I'm starting to notice in comedy with live shows is that there's a certain cultural penetration that you have in each city, and it's surprisingly consistent.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, I've sort of watched, like, well, in the last couple of years, I sell this many tickets. Just in any city, it will be about this number.
Yeah.
Do you find that that's the same with music?
Roughly. I mean, different you know, territories or markets definitely is a little different, I think. You know, like I do better in the Northeast than I do, say, in the Southeast.
Right.
You know, and I guess that's just cultural. I'm from the South. I don't know why they won't come out. I don't know. Not sure why. But well, for some reason, I always identify more with the Yankees.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, Jonesboro, Arkansas is probably a tough market to break into.
Have you done that?
No. I've played in... I played in Arkansas and I feel like maybe Mississippi once, and then just some other comedy clubs like around Tennessee. And it's not, I mean, you know, there are certainly people there who are our crowd.
Yeah, they'll come out of the woodwork.
But there's not a lot of them, really.
Yeah. It's harder to get to a niche crowd anywhere. And yeah, in the South, it is it's going to be a little more niche because it's just culturally a little different and probably wouldn't be as good for you.
Yeah.
But the people that are there...
would probably love that you came and love what right. you do. You know, you play for a small audience and they'd be more into it. I love that comedians say, I played this room or I played that room. It's yeah. so old school.
It is.
It's cool. I mean, it's like I'm talking to Don Rickles or something.
I don't know how else to.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I talked there. I talked in front of these strangers.
Yeah.
I went up and said things at people's faces.
I did comedy once, very recently.
You did? What? Where?
Well, it wasn't good.
What?
I was playing in Milwaukee. I was outside playing on a festival, and it started pissing down rain. It was probably dangerous for me to be out there, but the piano was absolutely soaked, and it wasn't my piano, and it was like buckets on the keyboard. I couldn't even keep my fingers on the keys, and it was just blowing, you know, water everywhere. And so I thought, okay, no one stopped me, but I'm going to take it on upon myself to just close the lid of the piano to save the pen block. But then the audience, I look out in the audience, and there's all these kids out there. And it's like 8,000-10,000 people, and they're getting soaked, and they deserve a good show. But I probably only play piano, so I thought, okay, well, I'm going to have to be a monkey for a little while because I really feel guilty that they've come out. And I thought maybe the rain will pass. Wrong. It wasn't going to pass anytime soon. And so I picked up the mic and I went out front. I said, I have a dream for my whole life to be a bad stand-up comic, and I would like you guys to boo everything. And I'm just going to – this is kind of Andy Kaufman. I'm just going to tell all the jokes I know very sincerely. I'm not telling you bad jokes. I'm doing the best that I can, but I want you to boo. And so they did for a little while, and then they started laughing at them. But they were terrible jokes, and they were all really dirty. And then I looked down, and it's like – it's different to sing dirty words, and there's children in the
music
audience.
Music makes everything okay. That's it makes right. everything palatable.
When you're standing there by yourself and you say something really foul,
yeah,
you really kind of got to – you own it. Yeah. Like, and I looked down, and there's these people, and I could tell they were pissed. They were like, he's really stepped over the line here. That fool stood out there and like started talking shit, and right. that's bad. And the kids are there. And it actually felt really bad, because then I felt like I was only trying to kind of be somewhat of an entertainer and give these people their money's worth, but my piano was soaked, and I didn't want the piano rental place to have a bad piano, so I was going to go up and start. It started good, but I realized that you guys really, that's a tough gig. It wasn't even funny when they were booing me. It just felt bad.
Yeah, even when you ask for it, yeah, still like, it's oh, not, something is, there's a mechanism that says that's not right.
It's not right. I think that's right. Yeah, you know, I pretend they were saying, "Bruce."
Sure. Are they saying boo urns?
Boo urns. Or they're ghosts haunting your theater. What was an example of a bad dirty joke that you told?
Let's see. I told all the jokes I could remember. First of all, my first joke was, because it's the first joke that I remember from being a kid, because Mr. Pibb had just come out and no one, you know, quite knew what to make of it yet. And it's a big marketing thing. It tastes like Dr. Pepper and stuff. And the joke was, this is, I was like third grade, I didn't understand it. Why does Mr. Pibb come in a can?
Why?
His wife died.
See, no kid would really understand that joke. Yeah. It's fine.
That's a true joke grenade. That's
yeah,
like
that's great.
15 years later, finally got it. And then I told my little Superman joke, because Superman flying around the world. My timing's fucking horrible, sorry. But Superman flying around the Earth, speed of sound or light or whatever he does, and he looks down in a field, much like the one that I could mm-hmm. relate to them, like much like the one today, like a field you're standing in.
I know what he's talking about.
Yeah, this is about me. And Wonder Woman is naked, writhing in ecstasy in this field. So Superman sees his chance, flies down at the speed of sound. Oh, I could do the comedian thing. Bam, 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 bam. Nails her, flies back off. Sorry, Mr. Engineer. Flies back off into the sky. Wonder Woman says, "The fuck was that?" Invisible Man said, "I don't know. My ass sure hurts." So I was just telling all the jokes I knew.
See,
from being
kids
kid.
Love comic book characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that just feels like
and
that would play.
Sex.
They love it.
Yes, they love it.
Those kids were drunk to begin with. And that's really when you can make
and
anal sex
really
happen.
It wasn't rape because he didn't know what happened.
He didn't yeah. know. Didn't and know. The Invisible Man, which was his fault for being invisible, no right. court would have convicted Superman of anal rape. It's Your Honor, fault. Exhibit A, yeah. I can't see anything. Case closed.
That's right.
Exactly.
There's not a court on Krypton who would convict
him. There's not anything on Krypton.
Oh, you know me not to be rash or impulsive, but if we don't evacuate this planet,
do you? I know we just
of course they spell cock with a K. Anyway,
did you end up doing songs at that show, or was it just like I'm just gonna get off stage now?
You know, my tour manager is a pretty funny guy. I was getting ready to walk off after it was done. He goes, I think you really better play another song. Okay. Because he meant, I think you better make this feel a little better because it doesn't feel good. Because it didn't feel good. So I was like, okay. So I opened up the wet piano and played another song to kind of bring people back together through the miracle of music.
And when you guys were like, Superman is flying around the earth. You just do the jokes but songs.
Yeah, and then do it like modern. He nailed his ass. He nailed that ass.
I'm telling you, you should try that sometime. You should take all those jokes, make them musical, and just weave them into a show. I think that would fucking destroy.
That could be good. Oh, man, I had an idea like that the other day. I was thinking I should take... Did you ever hear... And I really like it, too, actually. I empathize with the guy. The Ryan Adams tape where he's going off on...
Oh,
on
yeah.
Did someone ask him to play... Does someone... No.
No, you're thinking of the Summer of 69.
Where someone asked
joke.
To play Summer of 69 and he flips out.
Yeah, I know the guy who paid people $50 every time that they would. He started it. He was it doesn't matter. Anyway, so no, it wasn't like that. It was he got upset because he got in really, really shitty review, and it probably was really personal and mean and just a very bullying review, and you could tell what it was. And Ryan called the guy's house and he left a really long message, and you guys have heard it.
I didn't hear it actually.
Can you reference? Are you allowed to play that? Like, can you play that in your podcast?
Yeah, we can play whatever we want.
That's great. Well, because actually, he had a lot of points. The guy had Ryan had a lot of things. I know he could have been drunk. I don't know, but I thought it would be great to put that to music. That would be a good song. And I would credit him for lyrics.
There's a really good there was this band called Hickey, a punk band from a while back, that stole the trumpet from the band Voodoo Glow Skulls, which was like a ska punk band. But those guys are a bunch of like, you know, jockey assholes, and they stole the trumpet. And like the guys from Hickey are very much like a very messed up drug addict punk band from the Bay Area. They stole the trumpet. Everyone knows they stole it. Some like they played a show. Everyone knows. And then Voodoo Ghost Skulls guys start calling. They find like the number of like one of the guys from Hickey and just start leaving death threats.
Oh shit!
And it's like we're with the U.S. thugs. We're gonna kill you, Hickey. You gon' fuck with the VGS. Like all this, you know, machismo bullshit. And then what Hickey did was put out a split 7-inch. Hickey and the Voodoo Ghoul Skulls on side A and side Hickey, two of their best songs they ever recorded, some of the catchiest things they've ever did. Side B was all of those answering machine messages with a really shitty trumpet being played in the background.
Let's see if this works.
11 a.m., December 19th. Hey, Jim. This is Ryan Adams. Just calling to say hi. Well, somebody sent me your fucking stupid bullshit review of my show. I'm finally home, getting over the flu. And, like, what is your problem? Like, you have to come after me. Like, you have to make some kind of weird point to, like, fuck with my, whether I'm, like, legitimate or whatever. And, like, you mentioned in the end that, like, the fans eat it up, but, like, but you're different. You're, like, the voice of reason.
Is there a Mardi Gras in the background?
Because, like, I make music that's like The Replacements or like Courtney Love or like some bullshit. Like, it can't just be fun. You know, you do this to me like every time I come to town. And like your fucking ending, note to self, note to Ryan Adams, wish you were anywhere but here. It's like, you know, fuck you, man. Like, fuck you, you asshole.
Oh, I feel bad for him.
But he's got a point.
Like, nobody's interested. Like, nobody's interested in your bullshit. Like, you obviously have like a problem with me. Not with the music, because you can't refute it, obviously, because it's too fucking good, and you know it is.
Well, I don't know if I would say that.
Yeah, I mean,
let it go. But you write about me every chance you can get.
But I'm sure Ryan doesn't want to hear that again.
Yeah.
But the thing is there's something really cool and honest. Whether I mean, if I had left that message, I probably would hate to hear it come back over and over again.
Yeah.
But there's something really cool about it's so uncool to call the critic up and kind of confront him that I think that there's really kind of something to it.
It is, but what I was saying was, I don't know if I would say that, is to say, like, just because you know the music's good. Like, that's
Ryan Adams did make the album Pneumonia with the song Jacksonville Skyline. I think he could do whatever he wants.
Okay, that's fine.
He's brilliant, but... No, I know what you're saying, because that's
he's emotional. Listen, I'm of the mindset that you should never make phone calls, send emails, or talk tweet to back. Anyone or tweet when you're emotional. Right. I know I tweet back at people sometimes. Right. I do the same thing. Do you? I do. Yeah. There are people.
You shouldn't. No, you're exactly right. And in fact, we had
you
this.
Never take it back.
No, and that's right. And emails, man, kids out there. Don't press send. Like, just don't. There needs to be a campaign called "Don't
save
press
to draft."
Send.
Write it out.
Save to draft. Yeah.
Delete it. Write it out. Get it all out of your system. And
but
then just delete
don't
it.
Address it because no, it because could it go out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's all. I've done that before. Where you go, you know, I write all the stuff that Ryan just said into an email. Don't address it, and then go ahead and delete it.
Yep.
I think it's probably better off to use pen and paper. Still, yeah. It's like, yeah. It seems like I said the internet is a rough place.
Are but people still shitty to you? Sometimes I feel like everyone's.
I think that not at the moment.
Good.
But they. I could have interpreted it like that 2 or 3 years ago, and maybe in a couple of years I could do so again. I think you can get into the kind of naval observation as a popular artist that you can kind of look for it, and then you can get bummed out about it, and kind of it's kind of like pushing on sore teeth or something. It's like that hurts. I'm going to do it again. That hurts.
Yeah.
You don't know why you do it. But I think, you know, for the most part, it's pretty positive. You know, you bring it on yourself if you a few years ago, I got, you know, I was in the middle of a divorce, and a lot of people were writing a lot of stuff that I wasn't comfortable with. I was like, I've got kids, and these things that people are saying, it's like, you know, my kids will be able to Google this at some point. It's not nice. And I tried to take it on like, kind of like not really what Ryan just did, but more by saying, you know, if you wouldn't mind, but you can't do that. Like, because if you engage, then they just go further and then you bring about your own negativity. I think the thing is to concentrate on your art and be nice to people, you know, and not do what Ryan has done. But I kind of respect it because, you know, just because he did it. Who else has done that? It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, did the guy respond besides putting the message on the internet?
That was his response.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's a powerful response, too, I guess.
It's a pretty powerful
one. Yeah. It's like Tai Chi. But the emotional thing is interesting because, like, you know, we were doing this show, The Sing Off, and there, when does this podcast?
This will go up within a couple of weeks.
Within a couple of weeks?
Yeah.
Okay, then I think I could probably say it ahead of time. We film these things, you know, and, like, I don't like to bust. A group has an emotional performance on the show. That is something that's kind of in real time. It's like a thing happened in the family, and they decided to sing about it right on the spot. And I was completely flustered because emotionally I was connected to the story and the fact that the bravery that they just came out and were emotional about. What I realized is you don't make music in an emotional state either. You don't make the music while you're emotional. You use the content like Bruce Lee, like emotional content.
Interesting.
You because otherwise it'll drive you. And at what point do you just not fall on the floor? And go, right. I mean, you know, like that's expression, but it's expression that's driving you. So you're not engaging. You're not navigating it. But then I realized I was like, yeah, you know, most of the things that I've written I think are really on the money are songs where I went through it. Almost processed it and wrote in that sweet spot where I could understand the weight of it, but I wasn't charged. You mm-hmm. know, it wasn't emotional anymore. So, yeah, I think when people get emotional, they should definitely take 2 steps back, a pause, all that stuff, because anything you say during that state is not making sense. Yeah,
yeah, and also that's when you're going to start going down really weird path. Like once you descend into that lizard brain,
yeah.
It's fucking over.
Yeah.
And you just start saying shit like a child. Yeah. And then you punch a stranger in the eye with your tiny French fist.
I know.
That kid was going through some shit.
Tiny Ryan Adams.
That was the child's defense mechanism kicking in.
And you were making fun of him.
Fist of fury.
Do people, I mean, like when young songwriters, you know, which I'm sure you get this a million times. I mean, as a comedian, you get it all the time. How do I start? Like, what do you say to people with songwriting? Is it the simple, like, just fucking do it. Don't talk about it. Just do it.
People are often not really asking about the art form. They're asking about how I make it, you know, and they like, how do I get started? And you get down to it and they kind of want to know how to succeed.
Right.
And because there's no way you can say in 10 minutes, well, yeah, you know, you should start studying Prokofiev immediately. But then there's no answer to their question. I always just say it's like music. It's like VH1, you know, music first.
Mm-hmm.
Just concentrate on your music. Forget all that other shit. Literally. Damn it, I said it again.
Ironically, the opposite of VH1.
This is weird. Yeah, music has definitely become
but basketball
last.
Wives. Yeah, that's yeah. the thing.
Music well, last.
Yeah. Yeah. Music last.
Wow, we can make those old MTV jokes from the 90s for about VH1 now.
You know, yeah. people always fucking complained. Especially when I was working at MTV, they'd be like, you guys don't play music videos anymore. It's like, no one watches them. If people watched
problem.
Music videos. Yeah.
Well, I suppose because it became real estate that was purchased.
Right.
Like anything. It's like when the record companies come in and leverage what you're going to watch. When it began, it was just all freeform. And then, you know, people did watch it. And then it became, you know, I used to love video director would come up to you and say, I got an idea, and your song so inspired this idea. It's like you're going to be in a pinball machine, and like balls going to be rolling all around you, and you're dodging them, and like with your guitar. Oh, I'm sorry. You play piano? With your piano. It's going to be cool.
You're dodging with your piano.
You know, and then you say, oh, I don't know. I don't really think that feels like that song. No, but it totally came from the song, and that's what I'm saying. And then 3 weeks later, some other band, like, I don't know, Semisonic or someone, they're dodging pinballs, same director. That's what was wrong with MTV is that it was run back asswards after a while. You know? It wasn't MTV's fault. It was just the music business around it didn't give it anything to work with.
Well, yeah, and also, you know, just a very specific agenda of like, we have to keep these artists in a rotation to sell albums. And I mean, what do you even think of the music business now? Is it completely over, or actually not over? I mean, there are people who are selling albums, but it's a very small.
Yeah, because there's the music. It's like so it's like that Monty Python where there's the people's front of Judea and there's the people's Judea.
The Judean people's front. Yeah.
It is splintered off into so many little sections. There's the old music business proper, which kind of, you know, sells swatches or something. They sell something different, and then there's this music business that doesn't know how to collect the money, you know, and it's a good music business. Like, that's where you hear all the great new stuff and like the things that we've talked about, like these artists, and you go, wow, that's really cool. They're broke. You know? Yeah, they don't know how to do it exactly. And so I think it's now is a real golden time for music. But I don't think it's a golden time for the music industry.
Right.
Yeah. There's a lot of good music out there
right now. There's a lot of great music.
Well, you can find these bands now all over the country that, like two of my favorite bands in the past couple of years, they all still have jobs. They don't go on tour.
Yeah.
They don't go anywhere because they have to work.
And they knew coming into it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They grew up in this era. And so you're getting a really generous, honest thing from them. They're not like, when this breaks, God damn, I'm going to be rolling in dough.
Yeah.
They're not thinking that. And there's something really nice about that. I think that's – and they have access to get to you somehow. You found it. Like somehow it came through the system. And that's why I think it's a golden age. It's not necessarily a golden age for musicians. And, you know, fewer and fewer musicians are going to get rich. And that we just have to suck that up. Big deal.
Do you ever kind of wish like, oh, fuck, if I had in the 70s when they were just – blowing money on like private jets and like no one even thought about it.
Yeah,
like that. Is it that Joe
AIDS
Walsh
wasn't
song?
A thing we worried about?
No. Like what a time.
The '70s.
What a time.
That's it. That's a cool time. I mean, in the 90s when my band broke, the money was totally flowing. I mean, it was, you know, that shit just, we just spent money. It was crazy. Like, we'd do a show, and we weren't a huge act, you know, but we had a really big record deal, and we were in a big bidding war and all that kind of stuff, and people were flying me around on jets, and it was, you know, it felt like all this money was going out, and it would always come in. And we would play, like, a show. I remember playing, I can't remember what, maybe it was Beacon Theater or something like that in New York, and we decided a couple nights before, let's just spend everything on pyro tonight. and we'll tell the guys to let it rip in ballads where we don't expect it. Squibs, concussions, all the stuff, like just let it rip. Like it was like a rain of fire, like what was that called? What was the Rumsfeld everyone used to make fun
shock
of
and awe.
Shock and awe. Let's make this shock and awe. And it was scared the shit out of me. About blew me off the piano stool several times. And the kids in the front row, all this light looks like the 4th of July. And they're right in the middle of a sad song. And that cost, that shit cost $25,000 or something.
Wow.
Just for a joke. And
but that's what you're supposed like, that is right, that is
second chorus of Smoke.
That's Andy Kaufman-esque.
Yeah.
That is Andy Kaufman. You have to, you know,
You have to
cookies and
it.
Milk.
Yes,
yeah. in the buses. It is like that. It's a surprise again. Like yeah, it's a surprise. It's like something that you wouldn't guess. Maybe it gave some kids heart failure at 18 years old, but since they were drunk, they didn't.
They didn't even know. And so, do you feel like do you still feel like it requires energy to keep that stuff going, to keep the shows fresh, to keep like, or do you feel like it's vital for you to stay involved, to keep fucking around with formats like that?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm in a really nice little place where I go in not knowing exactly what to expect, and I can kind of be present with a different audience every night and take it somewhere. There's form, like there would be in comedy. Like, mm-hmm. Seeing Bob Saget a few months ago, and I thought, man, there's no form to this. Like, he's just going. This guy, it's incredible. But then when I talked to him about it afterwards, he's like, no, there's form to that. There's places that I know that there's not going to be form for 7 minutes, but then I know when to jump out of it. Mm-hmm. So there is form. I do that. You know, that's kind of the way that I do. I know I'm going into a time period where I'm going to make up a song. And so I make up a song on stage every night. But I know it's going to be called Rock This Bitch because that's my format.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got my title. The song will be completely different every time, and it'll have a lot to do with what the audience is thinking and what we're all together in the same place. So I don't feel like I have to do stunts, like spend $30,000 on pyro. but I do. I mean, Improv Everywhere, came out and did a couple funny things with us in New York, and that was good fun. But that's the last time I think I've done anything like kind of sort of comedy-driven.
Do you know Reggie Watts?
Oh, he's great, man. Yeah, I tried to get him before he got. He's gotten expensive now.
Yeah, he got real expensive.
He got expensive.
I feel like he would do something with you.
Well, I asked him. We had this whole line of emails from a few years ago where I was like, man, we got to get you open some shows, and so we're talking dates and stuff, and then all of a sudden it's like, I'm open up for Obama now. So okay, great. You take it away. That's too bad. No, I think it's really fantastic that someone as talented as him is getting recognized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's just part of our digital culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would have been difficult. Although, he's one of those guys that you would have seen, like, on Tonight Show, like, in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, doing
And now,
doing
from
stuff.
His album, Fuck Shit Stack.
Fuck Shit Stack.
Ready.
So, I want to have you do... Oh, but before you... Do you mind doing a song, RJ?
I don't mind. Can I take a piss?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, what, do you leave the mics open for that and you guys talk for a while, or
could
do you
take
like,
it into the bathroom with you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Let's go. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that, like in The Naked Gun.
Yeah, just like in The Naked Gun.
And now the engineer's going, these assholes, I'm going to have to run a wire
yeah,
all
yeah,
the way
out.
Yeah,
yeah, go take a pee.
I'll go do that and you guys can talk amongst yourselves.
We'll talk about you.
Sure.
And I'll come see if I can play it. The shimmering symbols.
Here at the Nerdist.
Shimmering symbols.
Here at the Nerdist Studios.
What?
Is there. Ben Folds is.
Why does the music always spike up?
I spike up because they
is it the, like the bandwidth or.
Well, it. Could,
I bet they have some ducking turned on, like some automated ducking, and then as soon as someone stops talking, it
then
just
it jacks right
up.
Back up.
It's
yeah.
irritating. That's why I don't like listening to Morning Becomes Eclectic.
I always notice yeah. that. I always notice that too.
I just imagine Nick Harko going and so and then just every time.
It has been a while because it's Jason Bentley now.
Jason Bentley, sorry.
Yeah.
Ben Folds, here in the Nerdist Studios. Ben, what song are you going to play for us today on the...
You're just breathing on the microphone now.
What? I'm sorry.
You're not saying words.
I was just playing around with what you were saying.
Superman was flying around the world. Superman was flying around the world, looking for something, not really sure what, till he saw Wonder Woman writhing in ecstasy. Then he came down from the sky. He's a fucking machine. Wonder Woman asked, what was that? The Invisible Man said, I don't know, but my asshole hurts.
That's a good song.
A classic.
How the fuck you write a song?
A classic.
So I don't know. What do you want me to play? Because
Well, I don't want to order you around. I think you should play whatever you.
I don't feel like doing it. I can't think of anything that I would just sit down and play right now. So I'm not gonna. It did occur to me. We were talking about the Ben Folds 5 record, and we said, "Well, I don't have any songs," which is true.
Yeah.
But then I was trying to think of what kind of ideas do I have seeds of that I'll be bringing them, and so I could show you that, and then you would have the.
Please do.
Oh, that'd be cool.
You'd have the exclusive, something that they'll probably turn down.
Ooh, sneak peek.
Sneak peek. This has been floating around in my head, and it's got a lot of syllables in it, but it's got no words.
Okay.
I always start with no words, and then I work the words onto it. So I really like these chords because I was watching a Philip Glass documentary that I thought was amazing. And then I realized that it's kind of, this sounds all over movies, but it doesn't matter. I like the way the chords move, these minor chords. It's like that. So then the melody I hear in my head is. That's it.
That does sound like an old Ben Folds 5 song too.
It does. That's cool.
Yeah,
mixed in with a little bit of it has like a cool Disney haunted house vibe to it,
right.
Which I love.
Yeah, it's got a cinematic thing, and I think that's because Philip Glass kind of invented that sound, and then I think probably the co-inventor would probably be Danny Elfman.
Yep.
And he's really done a lot of that. But I don't know how many people apply that to rock, but that's something I was thinking about.
Go ahead. No, you.
I know you are. What am I?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Here's another little chord progression I like. Shit. I've been living in a hotel, so I can't remember. There he goes again. These are the kind of things that
gorgeous
stick in my head. Chris Hardwick on the Nerdist, he's a badass motherfucker.
New theme song. Can I request something?
Sure. Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
I love philosophy so much.
Okay, I will try that.
If you don't want to, you don't have to. There's no pressure.
I don't mind doing it. I can say that this is. I'll make the sacrifice because I want to make everyone happy. But
you don't.
Or you could depress. We could all start to cry and listen to Fred Jones.
No. I played Bardo, and I just did it sort of quasi unannounced, sort of like just like a few days before.
Yeah.
And I forgot to bring my little finger wraps.
Oh.
And I beat the shit out of my hands, and so I may not play as hard because it'll hurt. But I'll.
Well, I don't want you to hurt yourself if you.
It's okay. I'll play in minor. Skyline, hit the mirror blocking glass, and check out the reflections in my eyes. You see, they always used to be there, even when the sun was grass, and I sang and danced about a high rise. And you were laughing at my helmet hat, laughing at my torch. Go ahead, you can laugh all you want, 'cause I got my philosophy. Kiss my feet on the ground and trusted like the ground. And that's why my philosophy, it keeps me walking when I'm falling down. I see that there is evil, and I know that there is good, and the in between.
misunderstood. Yeah, don't you look at me, I'm crazy, but I get the job done. Yeah, I'm crazy, but I get the job done. And I say, go ahead, you can laugh all you want to, 'cause I got my philosophy. And I trust it like the ground. I love you guys. I did not realize you weren't having fun. And I tried you on the stairs and I told you to fly. Climb in your arms, you started to cry. You were too high. Too high. Speech that moves the stone. Yeah, it's really not that you can't see the forest for the trees. You've never been out in the woods alone. So you can laugh all you want to. I got my philosophy. Kiss my feet on the ground. And I love you, you're mine.
Key that was in. What is Mr. Pip coming to can?
Oh my God, fantastic! You have to start ending all of your songs with
like, like Wesley Willis used to end by yelling "Blockbuster, what a difference!"
Yeah,
oh
yeah.
My God.
Wesley Willis,
Wheaties, Breakfast of Champions.
How's your hand? Is it okay?
It's all right. Yeah, they're doing okay.
That was fucking phenomenal.
That was really
and
awesome.
Watching your fingers from here is. Insane. Is it Spider-Man time for you, like in that sense where like your hands are just moving in slow motion, but to everyone else it looks really fast?
Well, I will say when I see a video back every once in a while, it doesn't look like what I think I'm doing. It looks a lot faster and more impressive than what it seems like is not. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I don't know why that is. It's because I'm not really that fast. But it looks like it is.
It seems that way.
Because I know a lot of drummers. When I study percussion, and the drummers' hands are just so fast, and I'm definitely not in the upper 90th percentile of fast or anything like that.
Well, it's fucking insane to watch from right here. Is there? Can we request one more song and
Absolutely.
Then we'll let you go
yeah,
and
yeah.
then we won't force you to perform for us.
Yeah.
Jonah, you should really pick the.
I don't know. It's too many to pick. Fred Jones Part 1, but that might just bring everybody down.
Oh, the cigarette?
Sorry, Fred Jones Part 2. The one from Rock in the Suburbs.
Right, right. You know what I'd like to do, though?
What?
I'm an engineer nerd.
What?
Mr. Engineer, can I take that SM57 and put it here and forget the Audix? Would you mind? That's okay. Are you ready? It's going to pop out. Taking it out. One, two. There we go.
Can I pull this one out?
Yeah, I would make records on a 57.
Thank you so much for doing this. I know you
yeah.
had a long trip.
Man, if you get bored and want to play Landed, that's cool. It's up to you. Whatever.
Okay,
you get
we're back.
Bored.
I mean,
yeah. It's just sitting around.
This.
Hey. Or Zach and Sarah, or anyways. Anyhow.
I'm here all week. Remember, the more you drink, the better I sound.
listening to you play, just it's got me thirsty. My hand's starting to shake.
God damn it. I want to be 16 again and not think beer is good.
Jesus Christ. Okay. There we go. Hello. No. Fuck it.
I'm no pussy. I play piano all night long. My P-pop.
You know, I think the P's are, I think they're maybe there.
I think we might have a problem.
No, I don't think it's fun.
Okay, what was it? Oh, yeah, okay. The song came from Fred Jones. The reason it's called Fred Jones Part 2, Fred Jones Part 1 in my head was a song called Cigarette from Whatever Never Amen. And that was taken from a word for word, a run-on sentence from the newspaper. And it was about a guy, a couple got married, and then the woman had some kind of brain damage or changed her personality within like a year. She started smoking cigarettes, but she'd never smoked before. Everything was different. So he was conflicted because he'd married this person, made vows, but it wasn't the person he'd married. And so she had burnt the house down with a cigarette. And the sentence was, if I can remember, because it's much more impressive than it, when it's sung, there's no punctuation in this fucking sentence. It said, Fred Jones was worn out from caring for his often screaming and crying wife during the night, but he couldn't sleep at night for fear that she, in a stupor from the drugs that wouldn't ease the pain, would set the house ablaze with a cigarette.
Wow.
And that was in the paper, and I thought, well, that's an intense sentence. It says a lot. So I just put this music to the wind. Basically remember the chords,
but wow. That's
yeah. And then so I was thinking of back in 1999, I was thinking about how the newspaper business was going to be out, you know, and one case of an old style newspaper editor who had been, you know, kind of corporately laid off with the takeover, and just the whole idea that the guy had worked there for so long and then he was gone. So it's just a real kind of working class sort of song.
Fred sits alone at his desk in the dark. There's an awkward young shadow who waits in the hall. He's cleared all his things and he's put them in boxes, things that remind him that life has been good. 25 years he's worked at the paper. A man's here to take him downstairs. And I'm sorry, Mr. Jones, it's time. No parties and there were no songs, 'cause today is just a day like the day that he started, and no one is left here knows his first name. Yeah, and life barrels on like a runaway train where the passengers change. They don't change anything. You get off, someone else can't get on. And I'm sorry, Mr. Jones, it's time. Street light shines through the shades, casting lines on the floor and lines on his face. He reflects on the day. His paints out and goes to the basement, projecting some slides onto a plain white canvas and traces it, fills in the space as he turns off the slides, and it doesn't look right. Yeah, and all of these bastards have taken his place. He's forgotten but not yet gone. Jones, and I'm sorry, Mr. Jones, and I'm sorry, Mr. Jones, it's time.
Yes. Thank you so much for that.
Because his wife died.
Ben Folds!
Thanks, man.
You have been more than generous with your time. And oh, your microphone's back over. Are you gonna... Did you sing More Than a Feeling?
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right.
Well, maybe I should just not worry about it.
There we are. I'm back.
You're going to go into the crowd now?
Go
into
I'm going to work the room a little bit.
Hi, I'm from Racine, Wisconsin, and Ben, that was...
I don't know any insults. So
I don't know.
You're dumb. Your shirt, your stupid shirt.
You're ugly and you're stupid and you stink.
Yay!
Anyway, you've been more than generous with your time, and I don't want to... We want to let you go, but thank you so much.
Yeah, just 5 more songs, and then we'll just get out of here.
You played a show last night. Took a helicopter tour of Los Angeles.
Yeah. Oh, yep. Neat.
Which was amazing.
I've always wanted to do that. That always looks
you
like...
You should. You should go. I'll plug him right now because I thought that woman was amazing. It's JJ Helicopters.
Really?
Hitomi runs the joint, and she come in, she takes your credit card in her flight suit, she does the booking and everything, and then she just goes out and gets in the helicopter and cranks it up and you fly off.
That's it.
That's awesome.
So cool.
Do you go to the, like, down to the coast? Or, like, where's the...
We flew everywhere. Me and my kids, we flew... started out kind of over Redondo Beach and then flew through downtown and Silver Lake and came back down Sunset Boulevard. And we were like 400 feet over the ground some of the time.
That's great.
And people could wave and stuff. It was really cool.
That's awesome. Must really put the city in perspective and kind of lay it out nicely.
Yeah, as you pointed out, it shows you how bad traffic is because you get so fast. You know, you need to have a helicopter.
Where's our fucking flying cars? It's 2011, for crap's sake.
I know.
Let's just buy a helicopter. We'll pull together.
All right.
We'll buy a
helicopter. We should be able to do that. Ben, thank you so much for being here.
No
this
worries.
It's an absolute
Thanks,
pleasure.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Glad we finally did it.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. That's something we say at the end of the show.
Oh, enjoy your burrito.
Yay. That was incredible.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Today's mobile world makes easy-to-use collaboration software more than nice to have. It's a necessity. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and enter the promo code Nerdist.